It's Friday, the 16th of August, and this is the Monocle Minute. Today, is the world headed for recession?
We're due for a recession, and I think there's some signs that we are going to head into one, but you can't know for certain until you're actually in it.
The Carlyle Group's David Rubenstein says economic turmoil might be on the way. We'll cross to Bloomberg's London HQ to find out what we should be looking out for. Plus,
I'm Daniel Bache. Coming up, I'll tell you why Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is in more hot water just as a federal election campaign is about to kick off.
We'll also consider how the new Swiss embassy in Seoul is putting good design and diplomacy on display. And Monocle's Robert Bound will be filling us in on some dead air, or at least showing us how professional sports broadcasters handle the unexpected. I'm Ben Rylan in London. The Monocle Minute starts now. Financial markets sent worrying signals across the world this week, with many fearing another global economic crisis could be brewing. Bloomberg's Ewan Potts is on the line. Ewan, what prompted all the concern?
Ben, this week has been quite a roller coaster for investors. Several days of sharp losses on stocks right across the world. Now, trade worries first and foremost in investors' minds. The US-China trade war not showing any signs of going away. And just this week, China signaling that it's probably going to retaliate. It was hoped that President Trump's concession that tariffs would be delayed until later in the year would be enough to stop that retaliation. But China indicating that it is not. We've also had several pieces of poor economic data. The German economy, Europe's biggest, is in contraction, shrinking in the latest quarter, and the slowest pace of industrial output growth in China for 17 years. So economic data also worrying investors. And earlier this week, we saw the yield curve invert. And that means that investors in longer dated US government debt receiving a lower return than short dated debt. And that in the past has been quite a reliable predictor of recession. So that's another thing troubling investors.
And Ewan, going into Friday now, what should we be watching out for?
Later on today, watch out for more trade headlines and watch out for data on the US housing market, a key part of the world's most important economy. And we'll also get an update on Hong Kong's economy. That's expected to show contraction of 0.3% in the latest quarter.
Ewan Potts at Bloomberg's London headquarters. Thank you. In other news now, leaders from Australia, New Zealand and across the Pacific Islands held talks stretching 12 hours in an effort to find agreement on a climate change statement. As we reported yesterday, this year's Pacific Islands Forum was dominated by climate change and Australia's reliance on its coal industry. Full agreement could not be reached on the joint Tuvalu Declaration. Instead, nations signed a communique with qualifications. Tuvalu's Prime Minister told media that those present at the forum should have done more for their people. And Huang Thoi Town in central Vietnam will open a night market in a bid to enhance the region's after-dark economy. The monthly event will be held under the tiled roof of the ornate Tan Ton Bridge. Built in the 1770s, the bridge is heavily influenced by Chinese and Japanese decorative styles and has been a national heritage site since 1990. The first market kicks off today from 1900 and will repeat every 16th day of the lunar month. Visitors can expect food stalls, folk singing, and displays of local artisanship, all to atmospheric lantern light and the sound of rushing water below their feet. Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau could be facing an uphill battle at this year's elections after a report this week found that he'd violated an ethics law. Monocle's Daniel Bache has been following the story. Daniel, this relates to Trudeau's handling of a corporate criminal case.
Yeah, exactly. And the commissioner said that Trudeau broke a long-standing tradition of isolating the justice system from political influence. Basically, this stems back to him trying to get SNC-Lavalin, a huge engineering firm, out of hot water from reports that they had essentially bribed officials in Libya over a massive contract. And this dates back to the days of Muammar Gaddafi. Actually, they have been accused of defrauding the Libyan government of that time. He wanted them to have basically a civil punishment and not a criminal punishment. That would have meant that they would not have been allowed to bid on government contracts, which, Ben, is essentially their bread and butter. So Justin Trudeau, in his explanation, said that this had a lot to do with saving Canadian jobs. So he thought perhaps he was doing the right thing because SNC-Lavalin and a lot of their jobs happened to be in his Montreal riding. The problem is the Attorney General and Justice Minister at the time, the former, now Jody Wilson-Raybould, said basically she was strong-armed by the Prime Minister's office and by the people around him, and she didn't really like that. And she came out quite boldly and said, I won't stand for this, and stood down. And that is really where the trouble started for Trudeau. He thought he had moved past that. His right-hand man, Gerald Butts, quit. He was sort of the mastermind of the last campaign. Some ministers stepped down. It seems like that was kind of behind Trudeau. But now, in the middle of the summer, 2 months before an election, this crops up again and this report comes out.
Daniel, how serious could it be, however, politically speaking, for Trudeau's re-election hopes?
Yeah, this could be quite damaging because Trudeau was already in a lot of trouble with Canadian voters for not sticking up for the energy sector and for being exactly what he said he wasn't. He came into office promising what he called sunny ways, so a new way of doing politics, not backroom dealings and not interfering as other politicians might have done or seem to have done in past. And the other issue for him is Jody Wilson-Raybould is a quite high-profile Indigenous minister, and he came in on a feminist ticket and you know, promoted her as she used to be a former regional chief, promoted her to this office, and that was seen as a good thing, as a progressive thing. He balanced the cabinet, but then everyone is saying now, well, you've sort of walked back on that. You're not really following through. And he has refused to apologize as well. Former Speaker and the Conservative leader, who is Trudeau's direct opponent, is saying, look, this guy is a criminal and he's lying to you. And that will be what he goes on into the campaign going forward. And the left wing saying, you can't trust this guy. So he's in trouble from both sides. And will Canadian voters forget? Will they forgive him? Well, this report comes strangely in holiday season in the middle of the summer. So will people be paying attention? Yes, but maybe not as much as they would be if it came in September or earlier.
Absolutely. Certainly one to watch. Daniel Bache, thank you. Now to South Korea, where a new embassy is demonstrating the combined benefits of good design and diplomacy.
Embassies are important for diplomacy and statecraft, but the offices they inhabit often play a subtler role. For example, projecting the intentions, aims, and attitudes of their hosts. The newly opened Swiss embassy in Seoul provides a lesson in the art of doing it well. The low-rise timber and concrete structure speaks of both Swiss precision and a can-do South Korean attitude. The building takes its design cues from the traditional South Korean Hanok buildings, with state-of-the-art engineering and a few modern touches. With many Asian cities, including Seoul, filling up with Western-style glass and steel skyscrapers, the Swiss have shown that sensitivity to design and the flush finishes and attention to detail they're famous for can offer new solutions. The embassy is already going down well with the neighbours, helping the ambassador and the nation he represents build lasting relationships. Mission accomplished.
Finally today, Monocle's senior editor Robert Bound explains the delicate art of filling dead air.
Here in the long room, moments away from the start of this second test match of Australia, winning the toss.
In North London, around Lord's Cricket Ground, the weather forecast is grim. When these dog days of summer get wet, it means that the cricket's off and the resting teams play cards, do press-ups, maybe even chat, for there is a smartphone amnesty in the dressing room to avoid distraction. But for the commentators on radio, and less so on TV, there are no such diversions from the job at hand. There may be no play on the pitch, but the show must go on. From 10:30 a.m. until 7 o'clock in the evening, the commentators, summarisers, experts and guests on BBC Radio's Test Match Special will look out at a wet field of grass and fill. Fill, 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 all day long. They'll talk about the rain, perhaps the quality, wetness and depth of it, the likelihood of play that hour, then the hour afterwards. Then they'll chat about the attire of some of the pluckier spectators who've yet to vacate their soggy seats and how they are avoiding, perhaps, pleurisy. Then they'll play some old interviews with great players. Then, if they're lucky, it'll be lunch. Afterwards, the cabin fever and shabby may mean that they'll talk about dogs, paper cuts, scaffolding, pasta. Then they'll start on statistics. How many matches or series have actually been improved by rain? What sort of captains come into their own tactically in straitened circumstances? Then the famous baking posted to the commentary box, the cakes in funny shapes, the sponges sprung from suggestive moulds. Fill, fill, fill all day long. Ooh, matron. Radio commentary is a great skill. To say what you see so that those that can't almost can. But it's some sort of genius to be able to spend an afternoon enlightening patient millions with wanderings on tree surgery, pigs, lucky socks, bunkers. I can hear another shower drumming at the window. Now is the time to tune in. For Monocle, I'm Robert Bound.
That's all in today's program. You can read and subscribe to our daily email bulletin at our website, monocle.com. I'm Ben Brightlin. The Monocle Minute will be back with the stories setting our agenda on Monday.